Chapter 1, A Day in the Life, August 18th, 2005. The crime scene was in the middle of a large, muddy field. Junior, my driver, was doing his best to get us as close as possible. Halfway across, I felt our rear tires start to spin, and Junior slammed on the brakes as we slid 3 feet before finally coming to a stop 100 yards from where the tent was set up. Our tires settled into the mire. Junior looked at me as if to apologize for not being able to get us any closer. I just opened my door. The rain, which had been a steady mist all morning, had just become a downpour as I got out of the car. As the deluge began to soak my hair and make its way under my collar, I turned back and waved for Junior to accompany me. I was damned if I was going to be the only one who was going to be miserable. As I walked across the field to the crime scene, I tried to keep from slipping in the mud. My mood was quickly mirroring the weather. I'd just come from the mayor's prayer breakfast, and I wasn't dressed for this crap. I made a mental note to bill the department for a new pair of shoes. Just another day in the life of a big city cop. Junior tried to keep up, but the umbrella he was carrying threatened to blow him off his feet. My team had been on site for only half an hour, and I knew very little information would be forthcoming. But that didn't mean I would be cutting them any slack. As we walked up, Junior attempted to hold the umbrella over both of us. I motioned Sergeant Johnson over. "Talk to me, Johnny." Johnny tried to read from his notebook while shielding it from the rain. He gave up and gave me a summary. "We got a call from the construction crew that's working on the bridge piling. They discovered a body about an hour ago. The bulldozer unearthed it, and one of the crew spotted it as the guy was about to make another pass." A new highway was being built into St. Charles County. The park was being bisected to accommodate the construction plans. Johnny continued. "I got here the same time as Doc. He's looking it over right now. It looks like the body's been here a while, and it's wrapped in some kind of cloth." "Okay, let me talk to the doctor." I took a few steps forward and felt my feet start to go out from under me. I grabbed onto Junior, who dropped his umbrella in the mud, and Johnny reached out a hand to steady me. "Son of a bitch," I mumbled. "Next time I stay in the car, let them come to me." Junior picked up his umbrella, and a big gust of wind tore it from his fingers, hurling it into the muddy hole. "Junior, you better not be contaminating my crime scene," I growled. "Sorry, Chief." "And don't call me Chief." "Yes, sir. Sorry, sorry, boss." The rain was coming down hard, and it sounded like machine gun fire on the makeshift tent that had been erected to protect the scene. I ducked under the tent to get out of the rain and took out my moleskin notebook. I raised my voice to be heard. "What do you have, Doc?" The medical examiner looked up at me as he wiped the fog off his glasses. He was covered in mud, but had a grin on his face. "I've only been here a couple of minutes, Captain. You'll have to give me at least a half an hour if you want me to solve your case for you." "Well, do that voodoo that you do so well and tell me what I'm looking at here," I said as I drew my raincoat up and squatted next to the hole. I grabbed the handle of the umbrella and handed it back to Junior. Doc put his glasses back on and reached down to pull a tarp back to reveal what looked like a mummy to me. My mind took me back to a school field trip to the St. Louis Art Museum with its infamous Egyptian mummy collection. Doc had already finished his preliminary examination, and the wrappings were partially undone. "Without risking further damage to an already compromised crime scene, I can tell you the victim is a female. Judging from the size of the body, I'd say a young woman, late teens to early 20s. What I can't tell you is how long she's been here." "Why not?" I inquired. "Because she appears to be preserved and could have been here for years. My best guess would be several decades." "When you say preserved, it appears to be some sort of mummification," Doc replied. I could not believe what I was hearing. "You mean like from a museum?" "Not exactly, but similar." Doc's voice took on a professional tone as he explained. "The area we're in is very spongy, similar to the bogs in Ireland. At one time, this area was part of the lake. The cloth she is wrapped in appears to be an oilcloth type of tarp, possibly from a sailboat. I'll know more when we get her back to the lab." He replaced the tarp over the body. "I did find something I think you'll like." Doc held up a beaded necklace. "I found this in her hand." "Maybe from the killer?" I asked. With my handkerchief covering my fingers, I took the necklace from his hand. Up close, I could tell it was a very old Catholic rosary. "Well, it's not broken," Doc said. "It was wrapped around her fingers." Doc got a faraway look in his eyes. As you know, the Native Americans who inhabited this area had a practice of burying their dead with talismans. I held up my hand to interrupt him. Doc, can we focus on the body? Sorry, Cap. I know you don't go in for that psychological mumbo-jumbo, but the way this was done could imply love or extreme guilt, Doc suggested. Aren't they one and the same? Junior quipped. I gave him a look. I placed the rosary in an open evidence bag that Johnny was holding out. Bag it and tag it. I thought about the rest of my day and made a note to cancel my afternoon meetings. This type of case would require all of my attention for the foreseeable future. As I squatted next to the hole, I allowed my mind to absorb the scene. I shut out the noise and the weather and focused on the victim. First impressions are invaluable in my job. I try to get a feeling for the victim and for how they came to be where they are. Photographs are a poor substitute for actually studying a crime scene. The most important part of my job is shining a light so we can find the truths that lurk in the shadows. I've heard other cops say victims talk to them. I don't know if I would go that far, but seeing a victim in their place of violation is important to me. I have to make myself leave sympathy out of the equation, obviously, but I try to feel what the victim felt at the time of the crime. I took a hand from Junior and got to my feet. I put my notebook away. As I prepared to leave, my phone began to vibrate against my thigh. Keep me posted, I said as I turned away. I took my phone out of my pocket. The caller ID said my grandma was trying to reach me. I nearly put the phone back in my pocket, figuring I'd call her back later. But instead, I went ahead and flipped it open. Hello? I nearly shouted into the phone over the sound of the rain pouring down on the tent. My grandmother's not a loud talker usually, and now she might as well have been whispering. I shouted back into the phone. Grandma, I can't hear you. I'll have to call you back. I heard her shout, no. So I said, hang on. Let me go somewhere where I can hear you. I looked around and the closest structure was a porta potty a few feet away. I carefully made my way over and opened the door. The smell could have peeled paint and the floor was awash with what I hoped was mud. I stepped in and the wind slammed the door in my back, nearly causing me to drop my phone in the hole. Shit. I started slipping, so I put my feet against both sidewalls to steady myself. Okay, Grandma, I think I can hear you better, but you'll have to speak up. Just then, the rain suddenly stopped, as if someone had turned off a spigot. I heard Grandma loud and clear as she said, it's your grandpa. He's in the hospital. You'll need to get here as soon as possible. She began to cry, and I heard someone in the background take the phone from her. Vincent? I didn't recognize the voice. I'm a neighbor of your grandparents. They just brought your grandfather into St. Mary's Hospital. It doesn't look good. Shit, was all I could think of to say.